Chapter 5.
I can't believe you sometimes, boss, Danvers complains. You're just unbelievable.
But Danvers, Len says, widening his eyes, if you don't say I believe in Leonard Snart and clap 3 times, my inner light will fade, and then I'll die.
You are not a fairy.
Only technically true, Len says. I'm pansexual. While that term is generally used,
you know what I mean,
Danvers says, giving a playful push to his shoulder. Danvers is ridiculously strong and has issues remembering that sometimes, so the push is enough to send a lesser man toppling down to the floor. Luckily, Len figured out the strength thing pretty early, and he's learned to compensate for it, relaxing his muscles and going with the flow of it, so he's able to straighten up again pretty easily. He hasn't told Danvers that he knows, of course, since she's so obviously embarrassed by it. Just like she's too embarrassed to admit that she's hidden a microwave somewhere in her office, that she uses to heat up his coffee or hot chocolate whenever he happens to arrive. Since there is no way she's good enough at guessing when he'll arrive to make sure that stuff is always warm. He keeps trying to hint to her that he really doesn't mind microwaved coffee, especially since Danvers has a knack for making it taste freshly brewed. But she keeps looking vaguely confused whenever she brings it up.
Yes, I know what you mean, Len allows.
And just why am I being unbelievable this time?
You're planning on going out again? She says, throwing her hands in the air. With the mask and that stupid parka?
I'll have you know that the parka keeps my core warm against the gun, Len points out. Besides, it's the only winter coat I have out of storage right now. It might be the only winter coat he owns, but that's a minor detail.
You know the media is calling you a supervillain, right? Danvers asks, crossing her arms.
And by media, you mean that one specific blog, right?
Yes.
That blog also thinks I derailed that train by icing the tracks, Len says, rolling his eyes, despite the fact that the official investigation concluded that it was a combination of a mechanical issue and human error. That one? Human error, of course, is a reference to the fact that the transportation department couldn't be bothered to keep their trains in sufficiently good condition that a minuscule spot of ice, no more than a foot or two, was enough to keep the damn thing on the line. Ice. Len can scarcely believe it, but there it is. And it at least goes some ways to explaining why the kid could have thought that Len was the one responsible for it. Though if a train can't run over a few feet of ice without jumping a track, there's a problem that speaks to years of sustained incompetence anyway. Still, whatever the reason, the derailment would have been a total catastrophe if it wasn't for the streak. No, the blog is calling him the Flash now. It makes for a troublesome dilemma. On one hand, it seems like this Flash kid is actually doing good things, like rescuing the people on that train. On the other hand, he's still taking the law into his own hands. Violence is still violence, even against a criminal. Len's list of corrupt cops to take down includes a good number that seem to have forgotten that their right to be violent extends only as far as it takes to fulfill their duties, and no further. When you apply the same principle to a civilian who lacks any authority or right to use violence as a means of enforcing law at all. Alternately, Len could just charge the Flash with multiple counts of assault and battery the next time they meet. That might even work. Okay, I'll bite, Len says, finally giving in to Danvers' pointed glare. Why is it unbelievable that I'd go out again? What's unbelievable about it?
The part... make that the whole thing, where you're considering getting further involved with this whole Flash thing, obviously,
Danvers says.
Boss, what part of the families want to kill you is going over your head here?
I'm your boss, Len Mock grumbles. Be respectful.
Not in a million years.
I don't see what the problem is, though, Len says. It's not like I'm going totally solo on it or anything.
Boss, Danvers says flatly, you convinced the commissioner that the Flash incidents represented a possible threat to the overall impression of city security because someone, somewhere, was probably following along with his exploits on secret police radios.
The commissioner is running for office this year, Len says dryly. Anyone who offered him a method to haze the families by sending people in to investigate the illicit police radios, we all know they have, was going to be able to convince him of just about anything, including an invasion from Jupiter.
True, Danvers allows. Though, to be entirely correct, that would be an invasion from the moons of Jupiter, not Jupiter, since Jupiter is a gas giant and not... Wait, no, not the point I was trying to make. The point is that you also got him to agree to that because there is the possibility that the Flash is working with a cop to get on the police band, thereby making it part of your jurisdiction. That meant that you could help sponsor a Flash-related task force.
Co-sponsor, Len says. Singh signed on.
Yeah, to keep an eye on you.
Noticed that, did you? Len says, pleased. We'll make a proper spy out of you yet.
Aw, thanks, boss, Danvers says with a smile, complimented, but quickly goes back to being annoyed with him. I heard him talking about it in his office. He's not really in favor of catching the Flash. He thinks the Flash is doing more good than harm. But he's willing to back you so that he can figure out what scheme you're up to.
My reputation precedes me, clearly.
Boss!
Relax, I'm one step ahead of him. He offered me Joe West to be on my team, which is pretty obvious sabotage, given how much West obviously hates me. I told him I'd take Eddie Thorne instead. Since they're partners, he wasn't really in a position to refuse. And Thorne's a good kid.
Coming from you, that's high honors, Danvers says, but she's smiling again.
You're not bad yourself, Len says, smirking when she squeaks and blushes. Your compilation of weird incidents with multiple uncoordinated eyewitness reports was key to convincing the commissioner that there was something there worth checking out.
It's my job, boss, she says, grinning.
I'm pretty sure that's not part of a secretary's job.
Admin assistant, boss.
Well, while we're at it, thanks for letting me borrow that mask, Len says. Turned out there were some family guys looking for me that night. His contacts had been very specific about that, since D'Angelo let slip he'd be meeting with Len, but it'd been a risk Len was willing to take.
Made you borrow it, more like it, Danvers sniffs. I can't believe you are just going to go out with your face just, like, right out there in the open. It's like you never even read a comic book.
I'm not actually a supervillain, Len reminds her, deeply amused. Denvers could probably take over the world if she found herself in a world that worked on comic book logic instead of real-world logic. I'm not doing anything illegal. I'm just policing in a creative and out-of-the-box way. Danvers snorts. And meeting my community's needs in dealing with a vigilante like that. Len continues, cheerfully ignoring her. Anyway, the mask was perfect. Total anonymity, without any obstruction of function. Why'd you have it lying around, anyway? Danvers turns red and starts sputtering something incoherent, which means it's one of those things she's weirdly embarrassed about. It's like how she claims she takes the train to work, but manages to be there on time, even when Len knows there's been a massive train delay. Honestly, he has no idea what's going on in Danvers' brain sometimes. It's not like there's a stigma against carpooling or anything. Never mind, don't care, Len interrupts, waving a hand, and Danvers looks at him gratefully. They talked about it once, all those unusual reactions that she has. The way she gets flustered and evasive about the weirdest things. She'd come into his office late at night, jaw clenched with determination and fists shaking with anxiety, and offered to explain it all to him, because she didn't want him to think she was lying to him. He was, she explained, her only friend in Central City, and she was pretty sure she was his in return, right at that moment. And she didn't want him to start suspecting her of betraying him by keeping secrets. He'd taken one look at her, seen all of that anxiety and how she was forcing herself to take a step she clearly didn't want to take, but felt she had to. And he'd promptly told her that he didn't care if she was a little green man from Mars as long as she did her job and didn't sell him out. She'd stared at him, blankly, so he'd explained. She very obviously didn't want to tell him whatever it was she was offering to tell him. Not yet, and maybe not ever. Rather, she just felt that she had to. But Len didn't believe in outing people over anything before they're ready. So whatever it was she felt she had to tell him, she could tell him whenever she really wanted to. If she was more comfortable with him not asking, well, then he wouldn't ask. As long as whatever it was didn't involve him getting sold out. Which he was pretty sure it didn't. Then he honestly didn't care. Of course, then she'd burst into tears, and Len had hidden under his desk in an attempt to get away from the rampant display of emotions, yelling all the while that he would add a no-tears clause to her contract, which had the side effect of making her start to laugh even as she'd cried. Ultimately, she'd decided she really wasn't ready yet. But that she thought she might be, eventually. And they'd gone from there. To be perfectly honest, Danvers has always been something of a mystery, right from the first time they'd met. At first, Len assumed it was because she wasn't from Central. Danvers is from the area around National City, some small town in the outskirts, and she'd done some work there in various administrative assistant roles before she'd abruptly moved to Central, only a few months before Len discovered and hired her away from the court reporter temp pool she'd been working in. At that point, all he'd cared about was finding someone who wasn't very obviously a spy, planted by either the families or the other police departments. Danvers had been the court reporter at his first corruption trial. She'd been fast. She had to be, being a court reporter. Efficient, unafraid of the family connections of the cops on trial, and had trouble hiding her smirks when Len made a particularly snarky comment. More importantly, she had a clean background, as far as he's concerned, anyway. He hadn't quite gotten used to working legit at that time, since he'd been less than 2 weeks out of the hospital and spitting mad. So he just had those of his illegal contacts that hadn't heard the news check her out and confirm that there wasn't anything criminal about her. And anyway, Len got along with her the few times he'd dragged her into various conference rooms to do some freelance transcribing of plea deal negotiations and disposition testimony. So he'd decided to take a gamble and asked her if she'd like a thankless job saving the city, where everyone would take her achievements for granted and turn up their noses in disdain at her failures, plus a small pay increase and shitty health care. Amazingly, even with a pitch as awful as that, she accepted. Apparently, Danvers enjoys fighting the good fight for barely any reward. That, or she really needed the steady paycheck. Len honestly doesn't care which. It'd been a little rocky at the start, but they got used to each other over time. Len's an abrasive asshole and doesn't know how to use the services of a secretary, but Danvers spends half the time acting like she's invulnerable and the other half acting like she's afraid she's going to break everything just by breathing on it, and that's also pretty annoying. Luckily, after some encouragement, it turned out that she had the guts to stand up to him and call him out whenever he's on his bullshit. And ever since then, they've worked well together. Now Len likes to think that they've even become friends. Danvers even eventually opened up a bit about her history. Apparently, her abrupt shift from national to central had followed a pretty terrible blow-up with her sister and mother. Danvers hadn't given all that many details, but from what little she'd said, Len gathers that the sister had accepted a position based on some trait of Danvers that Danvers would have preferred to keep quiet. A position that involved using Danvers as a case study. And Danvers hadn't taken it well when she'd found out. "I know exactly what you mean. Fucking shrinks," Len told her after that particular confession, nodding vigorously. They'd been having drinks in his office at the time, since the last time they'd gone out to a bar, some family grunt had pulled a gun on Len, and Danvers had managed to get in between the guy and Len. Luckily, the gun jammed, or maybe the guy missed, but either way, nobody seemed like they'd gotten hit with a bullet. And Len hit the guy over the head with his crutch. But he decided not to risk Danvers doing something that stupid again. "Just because you ain't neurotypical makes them think they can push you around. It's like they totally forget that you've got feelings. Or at least they pretend to themselves that you wouldn't care about that type of shit at all. Just 'cause you're different." Mick had one of those. A foster mom that adopted him because she wanted to write a paper on pyromania. He liked her right up until he figured out that she just wanted his cooperation so she could do more observations. Never even occurred to her to think about how he'd feel when he found out she used him to get ahead in her career. Danvers, halfway into a bottle of tequila and a pint of Ben and Jerry's, giggled a little hysterically.
"Yes," she said. "It's like that exactly. I never thought there'd be a parallel. But yes, that! It's just like that. She's my sister, you know? She should be on my side. Not using me to get, I don't know, an extra step on the ladder?
Hell yeah, Len said solemnly, clinking glasses with her. He wondered a little what unique trait Danvers had that her sister had tried to take advantage of. Some form of autism, maybe? ADHD? He'd heard that manifested differently for girls. And anyway, it made sense, given how she clearly had some sensory processing issues. Hearing things louder than he did, and flinching at relatively mild sounds, and sometimes getting overwhelmed by emotions. Not to mention the way she sometimes didn't quite get certain basic social conventions. But he wasn't going to ask or anything. That'd be seriously rude. After all, he certainly didn't care what she had as long as she kept doing her job. And he was pretty sure by now that she knew that if she needed any accommodations, she only needed to ask for them, and he'd do everything in his power to get it done. He did make a mental note to see if she'd like some more pillows to go next to her desk, for her to fidget with, though. She liked those.
And she even made it out like she was doing it to protect me, Danvers exclaimed. But if she was, she would have asked, right? She wouldn't have lied about what she was doing. She wouldn't have... She wasn't ever planning on telling me. Not ever. I only found out because I was looking for where I'd hidden her birthday present. And we've always used the same hiding spots. And I found a file on me. Who even does that?
Bullshit, Len agreed. Total bullshit.
And then Mom got involved, and she was just pissed off about Alex's job, not about the fact that she was studying me. Except it turns out that when Alex gets frustrated, she blames me for taking up all of the attention and, like, I don't know, ruining her life by making her not an only child or something stupid like that. And while we were all blowing up about that, it turns out that Mom's also been lying to us, both of us, for literally years about what happened to Dad, about how he died. And then Alex starts blaming me about it because the trouble all started after I got adopted.
Ouch, below the belt.
I know! And what's the worst part, you know? They'd always been on my case about being normal. Both of them! Normal, 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 normal! Until I was ready to scream! And the whole time, they both knew so much more than what they were telling me. Taking advantage of the fact that I'm not normal! And it's just not fair!
Her lip was trembling again. To shitty families, Len said, raising his glass. He'd already told her about his dad, since he wanted her to be on the lookout in case Lewis reared his ugly head anywhere near Len's new job. And she'd been great about not blatantly pitying him too much about it. One of the reasons he liked her so much. And the lies they tell. After a moment, he added, lowercase f.
Uppercase f families lie too, Danvers pointed out.
They're not who we're toasting. Come on, don't leave me hanging. Danvers giggled and clicked glasses with him.
I still miss them, you know, she added. I think I'd have forgiven them, eventually, if I'd stayed. Probably way earlier than I really should have. Like, 5 minutes later.
Socialization and habit, Len says solemnly. Heard it's worse for girls. You're raised to be all forgiving and shit, yeah?
Yeah, basically. That plus, you know, I did always feel guilty about how I just showed up on their doorstep, So I've always kind of tried to play the peacemaker, you know?
That's the habit half of the equation.
Yeah. Anyway, I probably would have found a reason to forgive and forget and everything, but... oh, I was just so angry. I was in between jobs at that time, too. I mean, I had an interview scheduled the next day with Catco Worldwide Media as Cat Grant's personal assistant. No guarantee I'd get it, of course. But there was, like, this moment where I realized that if I was fighting with my family then, well, I didn't really have anything to keep me there. In National City, I mean. So I just packed a bunch of my stuff and flew away. Ended up in a hotel in Central.
Tell me you didn't use your credit card.
I'm pretty sure that particular hotel didn't even accept cards, Danvers says dryly.
She was familiar enough with Central City's extremely shitty hospitality scene now for it to be a joke, though Len suspected it hadn't been when she first arrived.
It wasn't exactly good quality, if you know what I mean.
Oh, do I ever.
Anyway, I was still steaming angry the next morning, so I pulled a bunch of cash out of my account, canceled all of my cards, got myself that temp job as a court reporter, and grabbed the first apartment that came on the market. And, well, by the time I calmed down enough to start feeling guilty about our fight, I was pretty well rooted here, and wasn't really in the mood to go back to National and be the first one to forgive. Again.
Totally reasonable.
They haven't even apologized, you know?
Danvers said, draining her glass again. She had the alcohol tolerance of a mule. Len was just drunk enough at this point. Thank God he isn't macho enough to think he needs to match her shot to shot, or else he'd be dead. To think about how much Mick would enjoy that quality of hers when... if he woke up.
I reached out to them eventually, and they just started worrying about me being all on my own in a big city. How will I be able to handle it on my own? Is this going to make it hard for me to stay normal without support? Yada yada, stupid yada... And when I pointed out that I was still really angry at them, they just, I don't know, wanted me to get over it. They even got my cousin to come try to, quote, talk some sense into me, end quote.
Rude.
They keep comparing me to him, Danvers added bitterly.
He's much better at being normal. Ain't he some sort of weirdo Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist that works almost exclusively in third-world countries where there ain't no modern internet? Len asks skeptically. That ain't exactly what I'd call normal.
Yeah, he doesn't really come back to America much anymore, Danvers says with a shrug. And when he does, he avoids cities whenever possible. Even though he used to want to go to work in a big paper in Metropolis, he'd even had a job offer from the Daily Planet. His original set of foster parents would have wanted him to take it, but they died, and he came to live with, well, with my family, and they all convinced him it'd be much too much for him. So, in the end, he didn't take it. He's like me. Not normal, but apparently it's okay to not be normal as long as you do it where no one can see you or report you or something like that.
Wow, Len says. What fucking assholes! I hope he told you to carry on. Danvers grinned.
He told me to do what I thought was right, no matter what anyone said. And that's when I signed a year-long lease. Not on the first apartment I snagged. Don't worry, I'm in a much better area of town now.
Good. Len was about to ask.
And also changed my phone number so my mom and my sister would stop harassing me at work.
She drained another glass.
And that's why we're still not talking. Not until I decide I'm ready to talk to them again.
I don't recall them harassing you at work, Len said.
I mostly ran out the back to take their calls, Danvers said. The one time they tried to call you instead of me, you'd just come back from PT and were super grouchy, so you told them that you would bring the full force of the FBI on their asses for wire fraud if they didn't fuck right off.
Len vaguely remembered that. He'd thought they were telemarketers, or possibly evangelists.
Don't worry, Danvers added, grinning. I appreciated it.
It was a good night, even if Len distantly remembers getting increasingly drunk as it went on. Kara didn't, but again, she has that ridiculous metabolism. And telling her about the first time he met Mick, and some other unnecessarily soppy stories about him. Either way, though, that background made Danvers understandably touchy about people who lied to close family and friends, and that, in turn, made Len feel more like he could trust her.
Mask or no mask, I still don't like the idea of you going out in person, you know?
Danvers says, snapping Len out of his reverie.
You're still fragile.
Len makes a face at her. He would love to dispute that, but he used his new braces for less than 2 hours yesterday, just for the not-really-maybe-kinda-sorta masked-villain-superhero confrontation thing. And he's already got cramps very nearly everywhere to show for it. Fucking bullet wounds. Hollywood is a filthy liar when it comes to recovery time, especially for ones that nick your spine. Actually, that reminds him that he needs to call Lisa again. She's still incredibly pissed off at him for getting hurt, after having promised time and time again that he'd be fine doing his thing and that getting her the money to go off and live straight was worth the risk. She refuses to see him again until he's better, even though she demands regular phone calls. He knows it's irrational. She knows it's irrational. But he can't begrudge her whatever superstition she relies on as coping mechanisms to deal with a father as awful as Lewis and a brother as reckless as Len, even though he does miss her.
You could always let the beat cops do their jobs, Danvers continues, sounding almost wistful about it even when she knows there's no chance.
As it happens, she and Lisa get along great, albeit only by text message.
It's what they do, you know, especially if this Eddie guy is good,
and miss out on the adrenaline, Len asks, arching his eyebrows at her. No, seriously, I can't step back now. I sold the commissioner on me supervising this personally. And Singh only agreed to back me once I'd specified I'd take the fall if anything blew up in our faces, which it won't, even if we do find that this Flash guy is up to no good. Danvers makes a face. Subtly, it's barely a wrinkle in her nose, but Len still catches it and interprets it. You have news, Len says, interrupting himself. He knows all of Danvers' tells. Tell me the news.
It's not definite yet, Danvers demurs, but Len's already waving off the disclaimer.
I'd take initial results from you over a definitive say-so from any cop in this division, Eddie Thawne included, Len tells her when she seems resistant to continuing. I'll keep in mind that it's preliminary. What's up?
There's been a noticeable increase in missing persons reports in Central since the particle accelerator explosion. For one thing,
Danvers says.
Noticeable. Even if we only track the period since the Flash has been known to be active, that's, well, a lot. More than usual.
Correlation doesn't mean causation.
Do I teach you to pick pockets? No? Then don't lecture me on statistics. I'm getting to the point. The point is, I've correlated instances of people seeing bursts of light or lightning with those missing persons reports, and there's a link.
Len straightens up at that. How much of a link? Damn, and he'd really been starting to think of the Flash as harmless, or at least starting to hope that he'd gotten to the kid before he started letting his worst instincts take over. But if he's already a murderer...
No deaths, Danvers says, clearly divining his thoughts from his face. Just weirdo disappearances. Sometimes of people who'd already gone partway off the grid already, even. But we're talking eyewitnesses putting the Flash, or someone like him, at ground zero of some of these disappearances. We're talking credit card purchases stopping the day after a Flash sighting in some guy's last known vicinity.
Damn it.
Yeah, she says with a sigh. I was really hopeful, you know?
You were hopeful about the Hood guy in Starling before the murders started, too.
This one seemed nicer, Danvers says firmly. Less intimidation, less judgment, less...
You failed this city!
Len will never tell her, but Danvers cannot do a spooky, intimidating voice to save her life.
More actually stopping crimes and dumping perps at the station door?
Thereby eliminating the link between them and the crime scene, and letting them plead out on technicalities, Len says dryly. Remember that jewel shop case? If we hadn't had camera evidence from the CCTV, we'd be up the creek and the perps in question would be as free as songbirds. And remember, like I told you, just because he's going after criminals doesn't mean he's not just trying to take out the competition, Danvers recites.
I know.
Good. You got anything else for me? Danvers makes another face.
Well,
Danvers.
She sighs. Okay, but one question first.
Len arches his eyebrows at her.
Is there any chance you're going to be so focused on this Flash thing that you'll ditch the Allen investigation? Because in comparison, Allen is really small stuff.
None, Len interrupts. He knows his voice has gone a bit icy. Allen's corrupt. I'm sure of it. It's just a matter of proving it.
But you actually like him.
I like lots of people.
Please remember who you're talking to here, Danvers says dryly. I know for a fact that you don't like people. Any people. Your list of people you do actually like can probably be counted on the fingers of a man who's had a few cut off. And I'm including your regular information contacts that you don't actually like on that list.
Len makes a face at her. Sadly, she's not wrong.
Worst, he reaches the same conclusion, even after adding Barry Allen to the list of people he likes. You're usually better at prioritizing your investigations, that's all, Danvers adds apologetically. It's pretty obvious that the only reason you're going after Allen is... Well, you know...
I've got a few more investigations already up and running, Len points out, feeling a little guilty. She's not wrong about his reasons. She's also not wrong about the fact that in a normal situation, he wouldn't have thought Allen's bizarre brand of hard-to-spot corruption was bad enough to get this obsessed over. Especially not once he found out how unbelievably friendly and bright and funny Allen is. Shit. Danvers is right. Len really needs to figure out how to make more friends. Not to mention how to get a real date, rather than whatever it is he has with Allen on Friday. The DAs already have enough info to take 3 corrupt cops out of active duty, which they have. And I've given them enough to get wiretapping warrants out on another 3. Central's so goddamn corrupt. It's a good thing Len knows how to play the system, and make sure the occasional corrupt DA that gets assigned one of his cases is either scared into working it straight, or that the case they get involves corruption by an opposing family, so they're incentivized to press on. Because otherwise he wouldn't have enough DAs to handle all of the cases he's feeding them. And all the while, he's building a body of law that he'll one day use to take the corrupt DAs down, too. So, all in all, they're actually pretty happy that I'm taking some time to do my own projects, like Alan and the Flash, Len concludes. Hell, Sing definitely thinks I'm up to something, and even he's relieved that I've taken up some normal policing instead of harassing his officers left and right. I've got the time to do both of them, and I intend to. Now, why do you ask?
But you're so cute about him, Danvers grumbles. That's not fair.
What ain't fair, Danvers? Len's not touching that.
The comms system the Flash uses, Danvers says, finally giving in. The one we couldn't hack into? I've managed to triangulate where the other end of the signal originates.
You did? That's great.
And I think I've located those people you gave me sketches of, she adds, nodding at her desk. Though, next time you go out, I'm equipping you with cameras. Your artistic ability definitely lies in blueprints, not portraits.
Next time I go out flash hunting, I'll have official CCPD backing, rather than implied, Len says with a shrug. You can put all the cameras you like on me then. You've tracked them all down?
Yup.
And they're associated with the same place the signal comes from.
Yup.
And that is... where? Danvers sighs.
I think, and no absolute guarantee, but I'm moderately sure that the other end of the signal came from Star Labs.
Len freezes. Star Labs. Technically defunct after the accelerator explosion, property of the now disgraced solitary genius Harrison Wells, the private clinic of only one patient, Barry Allen. Of course. Of course! He's in on it, Len says, starting to get angry. Allen. He's involved with whatever the hell new family unit Wells must be trying to put together, or whatever's going on there. Alan's using his CSI skills to help get this Flash guy to would-be crime scenes, figuring out where their rivals are and sending the Flash to set them up. Or, worse, covering up the disappearances and murders the Flash has already set up. At least the existence of this law-breaking Flash kid means that there's still hope that Alan hasn't moved into full assassination territory yet. If he hasn't crossed the line into targeted murder, then Len can make sure his sentence isn't too bad. Some minimal prison time, maybe. Definitely a lengthy parole period, and of course he'll never work in the police again. But at least Len won't have to think about smiling, friendly Alan locked behind bars for years and years, having his spirit crushed under the abusive steel boots of the prison guards.
Certainly seems like it, Danvers agrees, glumly disappointed.
She'd been really hoping for Alan to be clean, Len knows. But it's still just a guess, boss. I don't have anywhere near enough for a warrant, either on the Flash stuff or Alan.
Looks like Friday's still on, then, Len says. He's going to find out everything he can about what scheme Wells and Alan and this Flash are cooking up in Star Labs. And he's going to put a stop to it. He reaches out to grab his crutch, using it to lever himself up.
Where are you going? Danvers asks with a frown. It's not Friday yet.
Different lead, Len assures her. Same endpoint. You want anything from Jitters?
Cupcake, Danvers says immediately.
Like four of them. Ooh, and one of those Krulers. You owe me sugar. So much sugar. In the meantime, I'll go back to putting together that list of sightings for you. I know I said the preliminary list wasn't all I was going to do, but I swear I think there's something weird there, and I want to follow it up.
I trust you, Len says again. He likes saying it. He almost never did for most of his life. He's trying to be better about it now, so that he'll be able to say what he needs to say to Mick when, if, he wakes up. Let me know if anything new comes up. With that, he heads over to Jitters. It's late, but his contact was busy during the day, and late evening was the earliest time that she would agree to meet with him. Better yet, she's already there when he arrives, typing away on her laptop. Len makes his way over and settles down in the seat across from her. Miss West, he says, with his best charm-the-marks smirk fixed firmly on his face. Thanks for agreeing to meet with me. Big fan of your blog.